on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers. This is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. This is our Wednesday, October 16th, 2024 edition, and markets are interesting right now, and we are counting down the days until the election. We are now well into it. It's definitely feeling like fall here in Southern California, and my job, no matter the season, is to help you become a better investor. That's what this show is about each and every single day, trying to put you in the right frame of mind so that you are making consistent, good decisions with your money week after week, month after month, year after year. And we do this by answering your finance and investment questions, as well as bringing topics to the table that you can bring back to your own situation and make a more educated decision. Right? Nobody is right 100% of the time. Nobody is going to knock it out of the park with every move. But you can put the odds in your favor by using sound principles of fundamentals of investments and markets that we try to impart on you each and every day. Once again, this show is about you. So don't hesitate to give us a call. Now, in just a bit, we're going to talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics. But as usual, let's tackle this caller question now that came in on 888-99-CHART.
Hey, how you doing, InvestTalk? Wondering about Alibaba, ticker symbol BABA. Want to get your thoughts on that. Had a nice little run-up with the China stimulus package. Want to see if that's something that will continue. Thank you so much.
Looking at Alibaba, and this moved up nicely over the past couple of months because of the Chinese stimulus, like you said. And going back to my comments on yesterday's show about how this is a stimulus package that is really designed more to stem the tide of problems underneath the Chinese economy as opposed to really stimulate growth. And I think that's why the Chinese stocks have taken a step back here, is because there's not a lot of substance to this. Really what's happening here is they're kicking the debt up to the sovereign level. What that means is go back to the 08 financial crisis. What were the bailouts of the banks in 08? What were they about? They were taking on the debt of these corporations and the bad debts of, you know, bad mortgages, and using government funds in order to buy them reinvigorate capital, etc. And that increased the total debt of the government. So that's the sovereign level, okay? And so that's what's kind of happening now, because what's happening within China is not necessarily a lot of the corporations, but a lot of the municipalities, is, you know, kind of a bailout of the municipalities. Think of, you know, the federal government coming in and bailing out a lot of bad debts of, you know, cities and states that got into trouble because they were not allocating capital correctly, right? What's happened in China, there's a lot of misallocation of capital, especially on the state and local level, due to a misalignment of incentives. And that's, you know, two decades in the making. And so what this is really designed to do is to bail out a lot of those and kick that debt up to the sovereign level, right? To the Chinese national government. And, you know, is that a net positive? Sure. But is that going to really solve the underlying problem in China, which is a demographic situation that is dire? I think the estimate is they'll have half as many people by 2050. Okay. So you have less consumption year after year because they're running out of people under 50, right? Vast majority of the people are now becoming over 50, even into their elder years, and those people don't consume. And that's an issue. So I think the longer term structural problems are still there. Now, as a trade, could there be more to this leg? Sure. But I don't see it as a good investment. I think that maybe as a trade, but it's still extremely high risk. Here comes a live call. I like this because interaction is always preferred. And we're going to talk to John. He's in St. Louis. He wants to talk about profits.
Hi. Yeah, I was calling. My stock I own, Cameco, ticker symbol CCJ.
Yep.
I recently just hit like about 50% profit on it. I bought in at around $37. Mm-hmm. I am new to investing, and I'm learning about capital gains tax, short-term, long-term, all that. Is it advisable? I think you would generally advise somebody to take gains at around 50% because it seems like a large number. And so I was wondering, is it advisable to take the profits now and eat the short-term capital gains tax, or should I hold out for a year and then start thinking about profit taking after that year period if I'm a long-term holder?
I'm assuming this is in a taxable account, right? Not an IRA or anything like that, right?
Taxable, yes.
Okay. So first off, just a arbitrary number like 50% is not a way to, not a reason to take profits, okay? It's a nice gain, but in the equity world, you know, 50% gains are very common. And 50% gains often turn into 100% gains and 200% gains, right? Cameco was a name we own for clients. We've owned it for a long time, and we have well over 100% gains for most of our clients. If we had sold it at 50, right, we would have lost out on a lot more upside. Okay, so that's the first lesson here. Don't just sell because you're up 50%. You have to look at the underlying trend of the price of the fundamentals of the company, the industry, et cetera. And if we, as I've said for many years now, and the reason we bought Cameco is because uranium, I think we're in the start of a uranium renaissance. And that we had news today, more news today that I believe it was Microsoft and a couple other, another company was basically putting money into more nuclear projects. And so that's why Cameco was up again today. So I think there's some runway here, and that's what you have to assess is what's the runway for this trend? Is there a secular trend here? Is it a cyclical reason it's going up? For right now, I think it's both, right? A lot of stocks are going up for cyclical reasons because the economy is fairly strong and reaccelerating, mainly due to bank credit growth. But in this case, it's also because of secular trends that are happening underneath the market. And so I don't see any reason why you want to sell it. In fact, it just had a recent pullback and certainly has more potential runway to go from here. So I wouldn't be quick to take profits. I would probably wait until the full year so that you're taxed at long-term capital gains rates. And then you can maybe rebalance your portfolio after a year. But I would not just be trimming or selling just because you're at 50%. Okay. Now let's go talk to Gene in North Carolina, another live call, and he wants to talk about savings bonds.
Yes, Justin, thank you for taking my call. It deals with Series I savings bonds, and as you know, it changes, the rate changes every 6 months. Uh-huh. The next time it changes is November 1st and also changes May 1st. So November 1st is coming up. I'm not worried about the variable rate component because it changes every 6 months and it affects whether you buy it now or all the past bonds you bought mm-hmm. before. Mm-hmm. But the fixed rate, it's only good for 6 months, and the current rate right now is 1.3%. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, what do you speculate in November 1st, do you expect the fixed rate to go up or down from 1.3%?
I honestly don't really have an opinion on this. We don't really dig into these I bonds. We like TIPS a bit better than the I bonds. They just tend to be more liquid, and you still get that connection to inflation and the payout.
Sure.
And so I rather buy you know, a TIPS ETF, for example, and buy and own it that way, then deal with the illiquidity and cumbersomeness of treasurydirect.gov. You know, it's not as simple as, you know, selling a bond, treasury bond on for your broker, or, you know, you can buy an ETF like a, you know, TIP or STIP, something like that, that holds a group of those TIPS. So that's the way I would go. And I don't have an opinion on one way or another, which way the fixed rate will go after October 31st.
Okay. Well, thank you.
No problem. Thanks for the call. And hey, sometimes I don't know. I don't have an opinion on certain things, and I'm more than willing to say that. And this is one of those instances. We have a lot of ground to cover over the next 40 minutes or so. And our main focus point is about the Boeing strike that enters its second month. And this is a great lesson, a fantastic lesson. Boeing is one of the best lessons you could ever learn in the stock market. And that is that the numbers don't mean everything. Qualitative analysis matters also. Meaning, in this case, leadership. The leadership of Boeing is, in a single word, atrocious. And this Boeing strike is another example of that. And so we'll drill down into the story and go over what you can glean from what is happening once again over at Boeing. In addition, we'll talk a little bit about those savings yields. You know, that caller, Gene, asked about savings bonds, but bonds around the market, or not bonds, but fixed income instruments, let's say CDs, money market accounts, etc., they are coming down in yield. And so where are investors likely to turn in order to keep that yield rolling in, and how will that affect spending? In addition, risk. A lot of people are trying to understand their risk tolerance level. And we do this with clients on the investment side. But there's there are actually two other types of risk that you have to think about when it comes to the building wealth, is how much risk in these other two areas are you willing to take? And I think this is so important to discuss. And we will get to that as well. We also have voice bank questions on 529 plans, as well as Allison Transmission Holdings, ALSN. And we also have questions that came in via the comment section over on our YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. Now, I hope you've been telling your friends about the InvestTalk podcast being available over on YouTube. So don't hesitate to head over there. Check out me. You might even see my dog in the background. You might even see some charts that we are looking at each and every day when we answer these questions. Now, Jim Lay says, I would like your thoughts on EG. This is a very interesting one, and it's I don't want to say perplexing, but it's one where you have to, once again, not just look at the numbers, because there are other qualitative factors here. Now, what does Everest Group do? Well, they're in the insurance business, but they offer reinsurance and insurance products here in the United States and abroad. And we've seen with the recent hurricanes that, hey, they may have to pay out some hefty payouts. And so, you know, their business is good. Long term, it's a great business. Return equity is 23%. Right now, that's higher than long-term average, but still long-term average is around the mid-teens. That's still pretty good. They have, you know, a ton of assets on their balance sheet, right? Premiums that they have to hold on to, but, you know, they pay out. That's part of what they do, right? Is they have a lot of, most of their cash flow comes from their investment activities. Higher rates certainly help them. But with global warming and more of these weather events, you see the possibility they could continue to pay out a lot more in coverages. So, you know, the technicals on a daily chart are pretty good, but on a weekly, they fell back in the fall of last year. It fell from a high of 420, fell to a low of 352, and it's been kind of chopping sideways right now at the close today at 386. And technically, it's kind of neutral to bearish. And that's what worries me a bit. The business is fine. Long term, I think it's fine. But I think near term, and maybe this is the hurricane risk, I'm not sure. But I just worry a bit about the chart. It does not look that healthy, especially when you compare it to the rest of the market. So I'm going to pass on Everest Re, and I'll keep it on my watch list because long term, it does have a pretty good business. But I think they're over-earning right now, and the chart is looking suspect. Now we're moving to a break. Still to come in this podcast and radio show on AM 1220. I will tackle more of your voice bank calls and get to the main focus point. So stay with me, but give me a call and talk to me live at 888-99-CHART.
This is Invest Talk now with 59 million downloads. Tell your friends they can listen live, download the free podcast, or watch Invest Talk on our YouTube channel. And they can leave their finance and investment questions anytime on 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a quick look at the market today. It was a decidedly positive day, but mainly driven by small caps and actually small cap value side of the market, really driven by an announcement from Amazon that they were heading straight into the nuclear arms race when it comes to nuclear energy, shall we say. And so, they signed an agreement to develop emerging small modular reactor technology. And this is just the next in a growing list of tech mega caps that really are investing in nuclear power to run data centers. And, this is, like I said, this is the start of the nuclear renaissance. And you saw some of the small cap names. OKLO was up 40-something% today. Yeah, OKLO. Anything nuclear power related is just crushing it. And so I think that will only continue. What else happened in today's market? Small caps are really the leader here, up well over 1%. The S&P, that was up 27 basis points, about 0.5%. But even large cap value outperformed by up nearly 70 basis points. Large cap growth only up 0.29%, 29 basis points. And that was on the back of the ASML news yesterday that downgraded their expectations going forward for the chip sector. And obviously, they're a big chip supplier. And they were down once again today, along with a lot of the other chip producers. So we'll see if we get some follow through there. But certainly, the growth side of the market is starting to underperform once again. And that's really been the trend since the middle of the summer. And as we head into the election and beyond, the market is certainly pricing in a Trump win. I still think it's a 50-50 proposition here, but the market obviously is thinking it's a little bit higher than 50-50. And that's why you're seeing some movements in gold, for example, that continues to power to new all-time highs. Nobody's really talking about it still. And, the industrial side of the market is doing well. Financials are doing well. All of this is kind of reflective of the likely slightly higher likelihood of a Trump presidency and the outcome of the election coming up. So we'll see if that shifts, but that's what the market is pricing in right now. Now, my main focus point concerns this topic, and it's about Boeing. And we are now entering the second month of the International Association of Machinists strike against Boeing, and it's costing in total, nearly $5 billion. And this is after a string of bad news in recent years. We had the fatal crashes a few years back, increased regulatory scrutiny on what Boeing has been doing. And now we have a strike of 33,000 workers that started on September 13th. And their operations are not ongoing at the current time. And the Boeing workers and shareholders make up the bulk of the total losses, $3.7 billion. This is the first company strike in 16 years. And suppliers are losing out as well. They're losing about $900 million in the first 4 weeks of the Boeing strike. So it's not just Boeing workers and Boeing shareholders. It's suppliers as well. And non-Boeing workers within Seattle, that's seeing a loss of 102 million. Think of workers that are traveling to work, you know, stopping for lunch and breakfast and all the business that goes around Boeing. And so, you know, the Boeing has announced a litany of layoffs, 10% of their workforce, about 17,000 employees in the next several months. They've already announced that. And this, once again, is on back of the 787 MAX crashes in 2018 and 2019. So this just shows you that leadership matters. Leadership is so vital, especially these large companies, because shareholder capital is precious. And the way that the leadership deploys that capital is, it has ramifications many, many, many years down the line. For example, in this case, leadership decided instead of paying their workers more, beefing up their R&D, putting money into safety, they took that money and they bought back shares. And what did that do? Push the stock price up, but they bought back shares at very expensive prices when times were good and didn't give them a buffer. They borrowed money, levered up the balance sheet, and instead of running a business, they ran a financial engineering operation. And they ignored safety. And that manifested years down the line. And now you have unhappy workers, and the company does not have a cushion to acquiesce to the workers' requests because they're struggling to sell their planes because of safety issues. And this is nothing you could have looked, if you looked at Boeing 7 years ago, you would have thought everything was hunky-dory. But if I go to a monthly chart, this peaked out in 2019 at $440 per share. Now we're at $154 per share. And all the way, and it was a big run. From 2016, it was trading at 134. So in 3 years, it tripled in price, roughly, all because of the buybacks. And the business looked great, but the leadership was terrible and it needs to go. And that's the only way to turn around Boeing. Now, the next InvestTalk story behind this question: did Uber just win big from Tesla's robotaxi reveal? That story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
You've got finance and investment questions, and Justin Klein is ready to provide his unbiased answers. Call now or anytime, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's go take a live call from Art in Menlo Park asking about ticker ALB, listening on AM 1220 KDOW. How you doing, Art?
Good. How are you, Justin? Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I just wanted to ask about this lithium play, because I noticed it's been down quite a bit, and I'm thinking lithium, it should go up from here. That's my thinking anyway.
Why?
The lithium, I'm thinking there's going to be more EVs in play down the road, so
okay,
that's where I see the lithium play comes from.
Art, you call all the time. You listen a lot, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you heard me talk about lithium before?
Not lately. Because I've listened, but I haven't been listening in the last month or so. I call in once in a while.
Okay. Okay.
I have time.
Okay. Well, I encourage you to listen more, because I've been talking about lithium for a while, back when Albemarle, ALB, one of the largest lithium producers in the world. And I said back then, And I'll just say it again, that lithium is a terrible, terrible, terrible mineral to invest in if you're trying to play the EV craze. Why? And I've said this before, because it's not just about demand, it's about supply. When you're looking at any commodity, it's how easy can the producers go out and find more of it and bring it to market. Because if they can do that easily, high prices do not last very long. Therefore, high margins do not last very long, which means high profits do not last very long. And that is exactly what's happened in the lithium space. Albemarle made $20 per share in 2022 and last year. What are they supposed to make this year? Nothing. They're supposed to lose money, 3 cents a share. And they'll say they're supposed to make $2.10 next year. Maybe. Maybe. It's a $100 stock still. Pre-pandemic, they made $4 per share. I'm sorry, $6 per share. Then down to $4, and then up to $22. Right? So it's not a good mineral to invest in if you're trying to play EVs. It is easy to find and easy to bring on new supply. That is not the type of commodity that you want to own. It's not just about demand. It's about supply as well. In fact, I would argue supply is even more important than demand. Because like I said, it doesn't matter if the demand goes up, if the amount of profits that a company can make from that period of increased demand is very short-lived because itself and other competitors are going to go out there and just produce more of it. This is why I've said time after time after time, if you want to play the EV manufacturing craze, copper, it is by far the most attractive mineral from a supply-demand dynamic in the market today if you are trying to play the EV craze. Lithium is one of the worst. It's why it's down so much, right? This is headed lower, a lot lower. And so I've been saying this consistently. I feel like at least once a month for the past 2-3 years. But I still get calls about Albemarle because people think lithium-ion batteries. And I'm not even talking about the potential for disruption of the lithium-ion technology. Right? What if there's another battery type of technology that comes out that doesn't involve lithium? Think of the amount of the value of these mines are going to go to next to nothing. Albemarle would probably drop into the pennies, right? If that were to happen. Okay, so no, this is not a place that you want to invest. Thanks for the call. Let's make it 2 in a row and go talk to Corey from Houston. He's on the live line asking about URA.
Yeah, Corey, hi. Corey calling here from Houston. Just interested in your review of the uranium space. I recently got invested in a uranium ETF. Didn't go with a single play, but invested some money in the stock ticker URA. I'm just interested in your feedback. It's had a nice run recently. And I know there's a lot of companies currently interested in green energy and the pivot to nuclear. So just interested in your feedback.
Yeah, I mean, today is just another example of this, with Google really jumping on board here. It was Google, Amazon, Google, I think Google's a couple days ago, Amazon recently. There's all the big tech companies are headed this direction. And URA, it's a fine ETF, good broad exposure to the uranium space. Cameco is the top holding here, 24%. Sprott Physical Uranium Trust, that's at about 9.5%. So I like those. And then you get into some utility companies, Kazatomprom. It's a largest in Eastern Europe. They're having trouble with some output, but you know, you have some exposure there. You have some small miners like Denison Mines in there as well. So you get broad diversification. I have no qualms with this. Definitely a good one to have in your portfolio. If you don't want to do, if you don't want a specific exposure to one name, this is a good broad-based exposure to uranium space.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Now let's touch a bit on investment risk. And most financial advisors, like us, we try to assess our client's risk. We use a software called Nitrogen. It used to be called Riskalyze. Now it's called Nitrogen. And it gives a score of 1 to 99 and figure out where someone is on the risk scale. And most advisors have this system. And they use some sort of questionnaire and try to figure this out. And it's helpful when you're looking at investments. But risk isn't only confined to investments. And I think it's very important to understand, especially if you're looking at long-term wealth and happiness. Your investments are not the only way that you can take risks and have financial payoffs. There are others such as career risk, as well as social risk. But a lot of people don't think of it that way. Okay. Let's say you switch careers. That's a risk, right? Let's say you go to school for a long period of time in order to become a doctor or a lawyer, right? There's risk there that you may not complete it, that by the time you're done, it's not as lucrative as you thought it would be, for example. And so taking career risk is actually probably the most, probably has the highest payoff, let's just say that. And so if you can tolerate career risk, that is another way to get to your ultimate goals, which is financial independence, wealth, and happiness. And then there's social risk as well. You know, what's the saying that your network is your net worth? I love that saying. Your network is your net worth. And frankly, I'll be the first to tell you, I think that's absolutely true. The people that I know in my lives not just bring me a lot of happiness, but some of the best business deals that I've done, the best advice I've ever received have come from the people that I have around me, my friends. I know a lot of founders of companies that have done very well and have learned a lot from them, and I've taken a lot from those relationships. And unless you take social risk, which is going out, talking to people, some people are a waste of your time. Others are amazing connections that, you know, will last a lifetime. And some people aren't willing to take that risk, right? They're introverts. They don't really go out there and try to meet new people. They don't like to go social events, etc. And, you know, that is safe. But, you know, who are you gaining knowledge from? Who are you gaining connections from? Or who are you getting opportunities from? And so the willingness to take social risks is a key component to accumulating wealth. And so those two things, high tolerance of social and career risks, are the surest path to building wealth, if we're being honest. And so when you're thinking about risk in your life, don't just think about it in the investment landscape. It's the returns of your overall portfolios, both on the investment side and in life, that really matter. And unless you're able to be honest about that and take some risks, then ultimately, I think you're going to lag your peers. And so make sure you're taking risks in all parts of your life to some degree. There's another question that came in via the YouTube channel. And Muck02 says, if you can explain your method for arriving at a price target for stocks, that would be helpful. Thank you for all your education and advice. Now, this is certainly very difficult. Now, there are a lot of different ways to skin this cat. There is your discounted cash flow method. That is the standard, kind of the industry standard. And cash flows are, you know, what are the earnings and dividends that are coming to you, the shareholder, over time, discounting those by a certain discount rate, typically the 10-year treasury, and discounting that back to today's value. That's the standard. There's another way that's, I think, a bit more common that we typically use, which is a multiple method, right? Looking at not just earnings now, but ideally in the future, next few years, and what multiple should it have? Now, there's a couple of factors that you have to figure out based on what multiple it should have. Okay, what about the industry? Does the industry tend to trade at a certain multiple? Enterprise value to EBITDA is a good one, but you can use PE, you can use price to sales, you can use a lot of them. But we tend to use something that's a little bit all-encompassing, which would be enterprise value to EBITDA. And then you have to figure out, should it trade at a multiple that's higher or lower than the industry average? A lot of that depends on the quality of the business, the sustainability of the business, right? The economic moat that the business has. If it's a business that is hard to disrupt, it should trade at a premium. Think of Apple, right? Apple, you know, great business, user base, billions of people, deep and strong. So it should trade at a premium to its peers in that sense. Okay. And then you look at the growth of the company. Is it above the industry average or lower, right? If it's higher, then it should trade also at a premium to the overall industry. And you arrive at an appropriate multiple. And then you look at forward-looking earnings, forward-looking EBITDA. And then you get a price target. So that's this, I wouldn't say it's simple. That is probably the best way. That's one of the main ways that we come up with price targets for our companies. This is Invest Talk, now with more than 59 million downloads, and our work continues in 1 minute.
Invest Talk is made better when listeners add their voices.
This is Nick from Seattle.
Hey, this is Steve out of Charleston, South Carolina.
Could you comment on Barrick Gold? G-O-L-D.
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
Be patient. Don't rush into anything. Understand what you own.
I would probably trim here, but I don't see any reason why you'd want to sell out of it.
Voice bank calls are very important, but so are the spontaneous questions that come in during the Invest Talk live stream.
Let's pivot over to a live call. We love those.
Looks like we got our first live call. I love live calls.
Let's go. If you've never called, what are you waiting for?
Let's go take another live call.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little.
It's like we got a live call.
Call Invest Talk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific time.
That makes sense?
Yeah, it sure does. I appreciate the advice.
888-99-CHART.
Yes, I'd like to find out. This is Shred from California. I'd love to find out your analysis on ALSN, Allison Transmission Holdings. They seem like a solid company. They had some defense in there, trucking companies that truck products. I would think they're all over the world. I think they're I just like transmission. I just feel like they're just a good trucking company. I just wanted to see what your whole analysis would be, if that's a good stock to own for long term. Thank you.
All right, looking at Allison Transmission Holdings, ALSN is the symbol. And this is a name that we've owned for a while for clients, back when it was trading, I believe, in the high 30s when we started buying it. Now it's at 99.52 at the close today. And this is the largest manufacturer of fully automatic transmissions for commercial vehicles. And we love this company. It's not a giant name, about $8.6 billion market cap. And we bought it when it was roughly half that, right? Because it's we're up more than 100% on the name for most of our clients. And, you know, it has a good balance sheet, profitability, return equity, 54%, return invested capital, 18%. it's just a fantastic business. And it's at a 52-week high, but I think there's more upside here as it's supposed to make $9.21 next year. And it's a $99 stock. So 11 multiple, I think it can go certainly higher from here. Now we're moving into a break. I'm here to take your calls at 888-99-CHART.
The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances for success. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Hello, this question is for Justin. I'm just wondering what you think about Roblox, RBLX. I was always impressed by the large number of users it has, young users, and thinking that might turn into, they turn older and they use it even more and they have, their kids use it or whatever. I was just wondering whether you think it's time to sell it. Thanks. Bye.
Well, let's look at Roblox. RBLX is the symbol. It is a company that has a good balance sheet. That's positive. But, you know, it's interesting here. Its free cash flow is positive, turned negative a bit in 2023. But its profitability has been always been really bad. And that's what worries me. Why is their profitability so bad? And they continue to issue more and more shares each and every year. So they keep diluting shareholders. And you would think that their strong revenue growth would turn into strong profit growth. But it's not. They made money in 2021, but they've lost money every year, every quarter since. So what's happening here? Where's the beef? I don't like that. And it's been trading sideways, basically in a range between the mid-20s and $50, basically since early 2022. And they went IPO back around $70. And the first 6 months, it ran up to $136, $140. And lockup period ended and insider sold. And it just continues to be in a downtrend since. Now, the technicals are improving a bit, but what is going on with profitability? That's my big question. Okay, so I'm going to pass on this because I just don't have a lot of clarity on why they continue to lose money. Yes, there's growth opportunities, but they can't turn this this business into a true business. And that's my issue. So I'm passing on Roblox. Now, let's talk about lower interest rates. Interest rates on savings, CDs, money market funds are now falling after the Fed cut rates by half a percentage point last month. And banks are cutting their deposit rates. You used to get a 5% CD just a couple months ago, very easily. Now, there are no one-year CDs at 5% or more as of early October. The average yield on a money market fund has fallen from 5.1% at the end of August to 4.69% as of Friday. And the Fed looks to be cutting rates additionally, we know, potentially through next year, all the way to 3.5%. So you're talking about another 100 basis points. And what that means is all of these instruments that people are now been used to earning 5% on, they are dipping into the 4.5% territory and likely dipping below 4, maybe as lowest 3 by the end of next year. Now, obviously, that could change based on the economic trajectory and the economy could continue to reaccelerate and the Fed might pause and say, you know what, our rate cutting cycle is done at a rate that's higher than the market is expecting right now. That's certainly possible. But a lot of people are reliant on this these rates, especially retirees who have taken a lot of money out of equities and didn't want the volatility, and they've been buying CDs and putting in money market accounts. In fact, as of October 10th, there was a record $6.8 trillion in money market accounts. And CDs make up 17% of domestic deposits in the second quarter. That's up from 7% in the first quarter of 2022. People are trying to lock in those higher rates. But we know most of those CDs are relatively short term, you know, year, two, 3 years. And so this is going to potentially actually hurt spending because we know that two-thirds of the economy, two-thirds of spending, excuse me, in the economy comes from the top third of those with assets, and they're the ones that are actually earning this money. And so what's likely to happen here is those investors are going to turn back to the equity markets. They're likely to put money in utilities, REITs, consumer staples, things that pay healthy dividends, especially as a lot of those dividends now are higher than what they're getting on their CDs and money market accounts. So very interesting turn of events, and we'll see where those interest rates bottom, but that's probably where money will likely flow. And that's why you've seen right now utilities really strongly moving to the upside. Now, I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. We thank you for listening. We encourage you to tell your friends and family about our free podcast downloads, which you can find anytime at iTunes, Spotify, Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, we can help you better understand your portfolio dynamics and calculate your investor risk tolerance by just going to investtalk.com and click on the portfolio review button. This is a free and confidential service. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.